Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Wren Women Salon Podcast, a series of interviews about what it is to be a modern-day Renaissance woman and how to flourish as a Wren woman in today's world. I'm your host, Dale Griffith Stamos, co-author of Wren Women, What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. Welcome to our Wren Women Among Us podcast, a series featuring incredible modern-day Renaissance women. This series, along with our Meet the Wren Women series, which features women who were profiled in our book, Wren Women, will introduce you to some extraordinary women. Now, people often ask, what is a Wren Woman? And the short answer is, a Wren Woman is someone, past or present, who is a multifaceted Renaissance-style woman who brings to the world a unique perspective and expansive attitude. She is not only about achievement, but about service and embracing a meaningful life. Today, I am very happy to have Dr. Sarah Larson on our show. Now, Dr. Sarah Larson is trained in Western and Eastern medicine, is a transformational teacher and coach, a world-class speaker and entrepreneur. Coming from a repressive society and having experienced an arranged abusive marriage from the ages of 14 to 19, Dr. Sarah sought knowledge in science, history, and religious traditions to heal herself and expand her worldview. These insights, which transcend traditional borders, are what she offers to her clients and to her audiences around the world. She is committed to the joining of our inner worlds with our outer worlds. She is a certified master trainer and facilitator of neurolinguistics programming, hypnotism, and intuition development. She can be seen and heard throughout the world on iHeartRadio, UBN Radio, TV, and CRN Network, with its 25 million subscribers. Dr. Sarah represents the Wren Women traits of flexibility and creative problem solving, a willingness to buck the system, a trust in one's inner voice, and the desire to inspire and serve others. Welcome, Dr. Sarah.
Thank you so much, Dale. What an honor to be with you on Wren Women. And thank you for creating such a beautiful platform for women to empower other women and to let men understand the women that they love.
Absolutely, absolutely. Please start by telling us a little bit. You know, I hinted at it in the introduction, but tell us a little bit about your challenging childhood and adolescence. Where were you brought up, and describe the arranged marriage when you were only 14? And what were other difficulties that you struggled with during those times?
It's a great question. When you meet someone, and when you meet me, I look just like everyone else. And for me, I was born in Pakistan, and I was born in a village without running water. I wasn't given a birth certificate like most people born in a village until it's time to travel. And being born in this village without running water, you know, came from a well off the land, was beautiful living off the land, having women, my grandmothers around me and my mom when I was born. It's a land where communication, again, Pakistan, in the villages, where women communicate and learn from each other. And it's a land where the wisdom doesn't come necessarily from doctors or textbooks, but it's passed down in the stories and in the breaking of bread together and in meals. And you very much, where I was born, And the teachers, my mom, my grandmother, very much taught me how to listen to the earth, how to listen to the environment, how to show up in a manner that was showing up in service to the people around us and could allow us to really be able to use what we were given to the best of our abilities. So being born in Pakistan, where men tend to have a lot more rights than women, my grandmother married the same age time frame that I was married in. My mom married very young. As soon as we started our periods, then the agreement to marry the man chosen for us went into effect. And so my mom, when she was 11 months old, was chosen by my dad, who was 10 years old. And when she started her period, she was married. And so even though we emigrated to the United States when I was 8, 9 years old, when my period started, so did the agreement to get married to who had been chosen for me by my grandparents. And my grandparents had chosen someone they thought would be really wonderful for their granddaughter. He was twice my age, so I was 14, he was 28. He had gone through med school. He did all the things in that society that a young man does in order to acquire the best wife to increase and generate a better reputation for himself and for his family. And so even though I grew up partly, was born in Pakistan and grew up until 8 or 9 there, when we moved to the States, the rest of me, the growth process, grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and in New Orleans, in the French Quarter. And I didn't fully understand agreements that were made or culture the way it was shared and understood by my parents and grandparents. And so at some point I was brought back to the village in Pakistan and married to a 28-year-old doctor. And at that moment, the agreement and the arrangement, I was as innocent could be. I didn't have an understanding of sex. I didn't even understand or really wasn't educated about what a period was or what babies could be. Mm. And so shortly thereafter, my first sexual experience was with a man who went through multiple ceremonies to acquire me. And I went through multiple ceremonies, not understanding really what was happening. And after these multiple ceremonies, our wedding night, of course, he expected a wife to have sex. And so I went from a very innocent, playful, full of love, joy-filled, unaware 14-year-old to, oh my gosh, the first sexual experience and harsh and brutal. And for the next 5 years became a power struggle between a man that very much wanted to keep his reputation and his family's reputation and a young girl not really understanding what the Eastern philosophy and the Western freedom, how they went together in the life that I was living at that moment. And so by age 19, after being choked, after my clothes being hidden, after numerous statements like, if you don't behave, we're going to give your grandmother or your these people that I'm taking care of shots, and they will lose their lives. But they will suffer. And so not fully understanding all of that, at 19, I sign off all of my property. I'm very, very wounded. And I am then into the final bout of left for dead. And somehow I survived that near-death experience and survived these really harsh, sad conditions, to wake up and with one of my grandmothers saying, "Oh, my darling, how could you do this? How could you bring this shame upon us?" And showing me a suicide note that I'd written under medication. And a family that all around, very, very angry and not knowing who I was, them not knowing who they are. And in the process of those 5 years, I was very outspoken about what was happening to me and making sure it didn't happen to my younger sister or to my cousins. And so it was a very wounding awakening as well, because in each of those near-death experiences, there was a connection and a welcoming by what I later learned through my religious studies, where Mother Mary was Jesus, with Buddha was Muhammad, peace be upon him, and all of my grandmothers and all of the elements communicating. And so at one hand, there's this violent experience. At this other hand, I'm meeting with and seeing future events, like being at the Oscars. And only when I got to the Oscars and experienced it, did I remember, in a deja vu-like feeling, wow, I had this experience before in my near-death experience when I was 19, and I didn't even know what the Oscars were or what might be experienced there. And so that blessing of being left for dead, that blessing of embodying and being married, that blessing and harshness, all of it helped me make sure no one else had that experience, set me on this amazing path to understand the body, to understand religion and spirituality, and to understand and heal the deep wounds that had come through.
Wow, that's such an amazing story. So here you are, married to this man. It has been arranged. You don't have a lot of choice. And if I understand from what you were saying, you spent a number of years in the States and then were basically brought back to Pakistan for this marriage. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was brought back, and then I lived in the United States as a secretly married, and the secret was my family would keep my parents from high school, from people around, and so it was a very confusing time, because I was brought back to Pakistan, but I ran away. While I was there, and when I ran away, they sent me back to the United States to be with my parents. And that's when, because I didn't want to be in these situations, I didn't want to, and I didn't understand either culture at that point in my life, understand how to be an empowered young lady, but I was learning, and I didn't know how to be an obedient wife, and I was threatened and forced and coerced into trying to become that.
I have no idea. I mean, I've been, you know, of course, reading and learning about you, but that they even threatened your family, that he even threatened your family, and this was also to keep you in line, as it were, that you feared not only for yourself but for your family. This sounds like a highly coercive and aggressive relationship that you had to deal with, and yet the fire inside of you, the part of you that knew the truth of who you were, kept wanting to push forward, and that's the part that sounds like it was fighting this situation and running away and trying to let your other family members know. Now, did your parents and grandparents know how severe things were for you?
To some degree, they did, and I asked for help. But as a teenager, and they were obedient. My mom was, and my grandmother was, and they had a they didn't grow up in the French Quarter a little bit or in the in Ohio. And so that little degree of difference between us, my grandmother's very, very loving. My mom, very, very loving, very much pushed for education. And I grew up on nursery rhymes, like learning English, knowing that when we would come to the United States, there was a real knowing that what, and I call it the Elvis Presley, Bob Hope television era. We were watching that era where it was America, United States, is their principles and the way that they lived was to such a high level. It was just a few notches below the experience of heaven. I saw that in a movie recently that Will Smith had played in, where they were really describing the how many immigrants that came to love and see and want to come to the United States saw and see America. It's really the United States idealized principles, it's democracy, a republic, we get to vote, women have equal rights, this or are developing stronger and stronger. And so there was a part of me that knew I was coming to America and growing up with, you know, these great movies of honor, and also in an environment where my grandmother and my mother made sure I was educated at a young age, so I had language, and then coming to the United States, being in Cincinnati, again, education and the openness and their willingness to take what we knew and acceptance and help us, the immigrants that were there, and same thing with New Orleans. They took what was and celebrated the differences rather than trying to make us exactly fit into the same mold as everyone around. So I was really, really blessed with that.
Yes, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yes, and it also sounds to me like your mother and grandmother, although they were subject to the culture in which they had grown, and as you said, they showed obedience to that culture, it also sounded like they were in another way your saving grace, that they were the ones who made sure you got the education, they were the ones who taught you traditional wisdom, and so that they were a large part of helping you sort of survive that very difficult time.
They were my grandmother's mother, and the ability to learn and grow and the ability to really, I think it was grounded early on, is whatever is given to you, find a way to become in service. Use what's given and build on it rather than allowing it to tear you apart or tear. It's really about this principle of being willing to take the pain, to take whatever it is and turn it into something useful, to use whatever it is to expand your own abilities and the abilities of those that are around you that you can nurture.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Now, we'll move on from this fascinating story that we could go on and on examining more and more in depth. But I am curious as to how it was that you then eventually were able to extricate yourself from this repressive marriage.
So I was left for dead. I woke up in the hospital, and I had written off all my property and all my legal rights in Pakistan at that moment. In Pakistan, I had gone under the influence of medication and signed off what would have been my legal right to inherit my government, my grand property, his property, the things that were rightfully mine that were promised. I wrote those off. I also wrote, not knowing that I had done it, suicide notes to all of my family members and his family members describing what an awful, like describing things that I was doing, like smoking cigarettes. I was listening to Boy George music. I was writing poetry rather than reading and serving. And I wrote all of the awful things perceived that I was doing and not being a good wife. I wrote all of those in notes to his family, to my family, the people that, and I wrote on my property under the influence of sedatives. And then when I woke up, it was after what looked like or was a suicide attempt or a killing event. And when I woke up, I didn't know how to speak fully what had happened. I was in such trauma. And I got sent back to the United States. And that summer, I moved from having these horrific experiences into going to Louisiana State University. I'd gotten accepted there, and I'd gotten accepted at Loyola University. And so I began, and I was being hunted at that moment. There was a gunshot through one of the vehicles, through the vehicle that I drove. I was getting threatening phone calls in my dorm room, and I didn't understand them or know, but I was just in such fear that whenever they would come up, I would go a little bit into hiding and into, and my high school friends and my friends around me, again, all of us very young, all of the, because no one believed at that moment or knew what an honor killing was, but my friends who had witnessed this and could see what was happening, I didn't know how to ask my parents for help. I didn't know, and whenever I went and spoke to therapists at LSU or at Loyola, I didn't know how to fully receive the help. So I would show up, and lo and behold, they didn't understand it, but they would attempt to help me over the years. And it wasn't until it was sort of being hidden, sort of self-healing. It was a little bit of, this is where I started learning philosophy and religion, and quite extensively dove more into science. And all of the areas that I was interested in school, it was a quiet way to quiet my mind and my body, obsessively studying or obsessively staying awake and doing something kept me from going into the nightmares. And I often sleep, but I daydreamed about a world where women wouldn't have to have forced marriages, where medicine and food would be available, and also that the messages that were coming from my heart, the experiences, the knowing of oneness and the knowing of this wonderful heavenly space, like I was searching for a way to explain that and integrate that into my life. And that's how I got into med school, in a medical school in India. It's how I got into and developed a great love of forgiveness, a great love of learning the Torah, the Christianity. Eventually, I would go on to learn Buddhism, and I would learn really to embody what the Buddha says, you know, forget everything you know, and begin connecting deeply with yourself and examining each moment for ways that you can serve and for ways that you can release suffering. And it was informal movement of connecting the mind, the body, the spirit, and making sense of everything that had happened to me in my childhood. And it was also a deep longing to be loved by my family, to contribute in a meaningful way to society and in a sustainable way to continue to wake up and continue to grow in the way that I could serve or in the way that I could explain what I had felt and seen.
Mm. And what's interesting is that you did this by learning about and reaching into both Western and Eastern medical traditions, philosophical and religious traditions as well, but you combined Eastern and Western medicine. What drew you to these different practices, and how have you used those, both Western and Eastern, in your work?
So in my work, when I got to med school and when I started learning, I didn't realize that other people didn't have the same ability to see, experience things the way that I saw and experienced them. When it was in medical school is when I really learned, wow, I have a different insight into situations and events than my other medical student, all of what they were learning. I also, as a Pakistani woman, went to an Indian med school. And when I grew up in New Orleans or in Cincinnati with my grandparents and parents, everyone would always say, oh, we're Indian. And they would say we're Indian because most people back in the early 80s and late 70s didn't know what Pakistan was. So when I got into Indian med school, I didn't realize the depth of differences that Indians and Pakistanis saw each other. So when I arrived in the school in India, and it was, I really understood there was a difference between the cultures and between, and Pakistanis weren't liked by Indians. And I then learned how to even go further into being of service, learning to a great degree, and how not to be offended. And in that learning, I kind of activated a deeper level of forgiveness, and I activated within myself a deeper, like I had to use my intuition to make sure that I passed the exams and I was utterly prepared for what was coming up. And so it was a very interesting time because I learned I have what I now call on my show Miracle Makers, these miracle senses that are available to all of us. Each of us, we now know that we have beyond just the five senses. We've got 21 that have been documented by Western medicine. By Eastern medicine, there are 365 different senses that we have available. But it was in medical school, it was in India, it was in these places to, again, that I had put myself into, that I wanted to go from surviving to thriving to passing to doing really, really well. And in that want, in that desire, I learned who I was. And I also learned about these extra senses that allowed me to do better in medicine, allowed me to serve better, and allowed me to really make a difference for those that that I could be fully present with.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's every single thing that you're talking about is highly frustrating to me because I realize that we only have a 45-minute podcast, and I could go on and on asking you an infinite number of questions about each of the things we're talking about, and I know we can't. So moving on just slightly, I will ask one additional question, and I want to ask a lot more, but you say about having multiple senses, not just our five senses, in both Western, where there are a number of other senses, and Eastern, where there are quite a number of other senses. How about in the Western, to explain to us what that means when you said that even in Western medicine, they recognize more senses than our five. What does that mean?
So our five senses, like our sight, our smell, our taste, our touch, we have beyond that our hearing. beyond that, we have like we have a sense of being off balance, a sense of if you're so another particular sense that can be knocked off if your nerves are knocked off. We have electrical sense. Our heart, when we really, really listen to our heart, and when we're in a state of joy, regions of our brain receive more blood to it. And those regions of the brain make deeper senses available to us. And we have great doctors and researchers that went on. There was a physician named Dr. Paul McLean, and he studied at Yale, and he studied the brain, and he found particular regions of the brain that he called the angel lobes would get more of a blood supply when people were being compassionate, when they were being of service, when they were reflecting transparently what was happening in their world, non-judgmental tendencies, more regions of the brain came online. And we're finding that in all of our neuro studies, our brain studies, and our biology studies now, that the masses that we said, you know, five senses and then the sixth sense, the sense of intuition, we now discover through institute like a heart math that more of our brain become available when we're in appreciation and bliss. And then through researchers like Dr. Paul McLean, we realize that there's more blood flow when we're being of service and compassionate. And so those are just a few of the senses that are being documented, how they become available are being documented. And those, how we're being depends on the actions and the beliefs and the transparency that we're delivering whatever it is that we're here to do for everyone else.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Dr. McLean, you know, initiated a theory of what he called the triune brain, being that an evolutionary theory, if you will, being that we as humans have sort of the reptilian brain, and then we have the mammalian brain, and then we have, as you said, the front of our brain. Thank you. The cerebral cortex, in which the higher behavioral instincts, if you will, or impulses of the human reside, and that we, as we continue to evolve, that will continue to evolve. We will continue to physiologically evolve into more compassionate human beings, for example. I sometimes look at what's happening in the world and I think, well, there's a lot of people running around still being pretty reptilian. and there are many others who are seeking that higher way of being. And so there is hope, you know, for an evolution of us as a species, certainly. Now you wear many titles, you know, you have done many things. You wear the titles of doctor, medical intuitive, transformational teacher, speaker, entrepreneur, especially considering your past and what you had to struggle with. I mean, it's really extraordinary what you have accomplished in your life. So describe a little bit, and of course, this is also very Ren women, you know, reaching out in multiple directions like this. So describe how each of these different career choices, you know, enhance each other and why you made kind of such different kinds of choices, but how, in fact, they all fit into a whole.
So being a doctor is love of service and teacher, and it really, the oath that you take, the Hippocrates oath early on, taps you into the mystery. Above all else, Hippocrates' oath is do no harm, and so becoming a doctor, a teacher, and then stepping into the role of medical intuitive, which is to know that our bodies are an intelligent field. It's a field of energy that can be shifted based on what's spoken and based on the elements, belief systems, and the connection between mind, body, emotion, spirit, and your purpose. That medical intuitive aspect teaches us to do no harm and about how to turn what is unseen into the seen. When you go from just being a doctor or a teacher into an intuitive, and you gain your ability to know it's your sacred duty to share what is unseen by others until they can see it for themselves. So that's how doctor, teacher, medical, intuitive, being intuitive and trusting yourself and building trust with those that are listening to you moves into transformational teacher. When someone knows from the space, the depth through which you're coming from, in order to create oneness and belonging and healing for you, that it transforms. Everything you do from that moment becomes part of the do no harm. Teach others how to trust ourselves, and that transformational teacher turns into speaker, and it's a process that awakens you to serve to a greater degree. At least that is what it has been for me. And I went into the world in order to create and serve. And when I learned that for me to do and serve at a greater degree, I had to become an entrepreneur as well, not just to create money for the philanthropy work in the nonprofit world that I'm so honored to have done work with. It's also so that I could be the decision maker and the choice maker of where that money and where those resources go and to whom, because I make the best decisions. When given power to serve, when there's more resources, when there's more money, when there's more respect or trust of you, you're able to serve more and more people with that freedom and with that trust. And so that's how all of that has fit together. And I'm humbly learning how to become even more resourceful so I can serve more women and make more of the research that I know, the studies, into books and into guided meditations and into things that will help those that are on this journey, that we're on this journey together, awakening together, giving thanks for all the ways suffering brought us to a deeper level of formulating what's possible for all humans in the future.
Yeah, and you know, you certainly also embody the Ren Women trait of constant growth and learning and expansion. And you know, I have not met a Ren Woman who doesn't have that as a very strong force within their personality. Now, you recently began a show called Miracle Makers that you host with your husband, Greg. Talk about the intention of the show and some of the guests you have had.
I love Miracle Makers. This show is really to bring and invite people like you, Dale. Dale, you're so extraordinary, and I'm so excited that you're going to be on Miracle Makers as well. They have taken what has been this journey and organized their difficulties, their challenges, and shared their stories transparently in order to help others heal and become more resourceful. And so they can speak about this miracle frequency. It's this energy of when there isn't a way. When you think about it with your logical left brain, you think there's no way that this could happen. But you step deeply into your heart and you step deeply into a willingness, and a frequency turns on within yourself to realize your dreams, to realize the miracle that you're here to make. And that's at Miracle Makers, we believe everyone deserves to live out their dreams. And as long as their dreams are serving their true nature, that living their dreams activates miracle senses within them. It becomes synergy. And every step of the process, when you can share transparently and in service for others, you can initiate and activate parts of yourself that make a better future for yourself. All the beings and all the animal worlds, the earth, yourself, your family, all of those work better from you being more of who you are. Miracle Makers really looks to help you be who you are all the way, because the more you are yourself, authentic, true to your own nature, the more everyone gets to step into oneness and be more their peace-loving, kind, still, on this beautiful dance, co-creating with life form. And that's what Miracle Makers is about. We give you everyday tools in order to initiate and activate deeper senses within you. We've had guests like Stedman Graham. We've had guests like Lisa Haysha. Stedman Graham has done so many extraordinary things for developing intelligence and developing education for young men. Lisa Haysha, soul blazing, traveled to so many countries. She's asked orphan children three questions and wrote those questions in a book called Whispers from Children's Hearts. Ricky Byers Beckwith, she's the founder of Agape Choir and beautiful Kaumba in Motion. And she's come on and she talked about music and that frequency of giving to children and listening deeply to what's happening for children. Yesterday's guest was founder of Yoga Math. Her name is Jenna Davis, and Jenna Davis took a calling. She knew to become a priest. She became an Episcopal priest and then heard God sharing with her to go into yoga and share the body and the wine and the body aspects. Yoga Math was birthed out of becoming the living mantras of what's been written in ancient sacred texts, whether they be Vedas or whether they be the Bible. And on Miracle Makers, we also have things on the website like self-love guided meditations, because the more you love yourself, the more you give yourself permission to be yourself in service to Source, in service to God, in service to our oneness, the more becomes available for everyone. So on my website, Dr. Sarah Larson, you can see the shows or subscribe. You can also get a dream body meditation or a self-love meditation so that your body can create, co-create with you the miracles you're here that only you can create.
Well, this is so, so wonderful. And unfortunately, we must say goodbye. It's been an incredible time. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah.
You've been listening to the Wren Women Salon podcast, inspired by the book Wren Women, What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. For more information, go to www.renwomen.com or www.renwomentalk.com. Wren Women is available for purchase on Amazon and can be ordered at a bookstore near you.